Yesterday we spoke about the possibility, or rather the impossibility, of a Nara becoming pregnant and giving birth to have a son. And that discussion was in a broader context of a sugya called Yesh Baga V'Kever or Ein Baga V'Kever, which began on Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and the Gemara about the possibility of having a son is on the top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. So let's go back to Lamed Ches Amud Beis and mention the suffix of Rava in the first formulation. The Gemara later is going to reformulate the suffix, but right now, Yesh Baga V'Kever or Ein Baga V'Kever. And the case is that after the ones and before the Hamadah Bedin, the Nara died. And by the time of Hamadah Bedin, she would have been a Bogeres had she been alive. And the question is, do we consider her a Bogeres in the Kever? Because the Gemara is going to establish later on in Daf Mem Aleph that a Bogeres is Knasa Li'atzma, meaning that the father no longer has Rishus over his daughter to collect Knas after she becomes a Bogeres. Now, assuming this girl, even after she died, she became a Bogeres, then her father cannot collect Knas. So what does happen to the Knas in such a case? Had she been alive, she would collect the Knas, because she's now a Bogeres according to the time clock. She's dead, so what she can do is she can be Morish, she can bequeath her Knas to her son. And that's where we have that discussion, is it possible for her to have a son? The Gemara quotes a long brisa, and the upshot of this brisa is the following, that there's no mitzius, there's no possibility for a ktana to get pregnant and have a son. Why? Because until the age of 11, physiologically, she cannot become pregnant. From the age of 11 to 12, if she does become pregnant, then she'll die. And what that means is she'll die after the pregnancy, after the conception. And we're left with the possibility, which the Gemara is about to investigate, that perhaps she became pregnant and gave birth during the Naros period. That's what we're about to embark upon. But before we get to that, let's just mention that we have machlokes in this long brisa between Rabbi Meir the Chacham about the permissibility or the prohibition of using a moch. Moch is a form of contraception which involves hashkasa zera, and Rabbi Meir allows it in three cases. And the Chachamim say that it's prohibited, even in those three cases, because of the principle called Shomer Pesayim Hashem, that God watches over His people, and a Pesi is someone who doesn't have Das, and she doesn't have Das, and God will protect her.
Well, wait a minute. According to that, that doesn't cover Muberet and Minikah.
Well, let's focus first on Ketana, and then we'll get to Muberet and Minikah. Okay. Let's take the case of Ketana. In the case of Ketana, Rabbi Meir is afraid that she'll become pregnant at the age of 11, because that's when she could become pregnant, and then she'll die as a result of the pregnancy. Chachamim say that in such a case, don't worry about it, don't allow a moch, because we have the principle of Shomer Pesayim Hashem. Now, in the cases of Me'uberes and Meinika, there Shomer Pesayim Hashem applies for a slightly different reason, and that is because she thinks that she won't become pregnant, either because she's already pregnant or because she's in the process of nursing. Mm-hmm. So she also is considered like a Pesi Shein Bo Das, not in the intellectual sense. She may be a woman of 40, but in the sense that in all naivete, she thinks, and this is mostly true in most situations, that she will not become pregnant. So Hashem protects her from becoming pregnant. But let's focus for a moment on the Ketana case, because where do the Chachamim fit into this picture? I mean, to ask the following question. The Gemara is going to build on Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir requires, or at least permits, that she use a moch during that period of time between the age of 11 and the age of 12, because otherwise she'll get pregnant and she'll die. Maybe the Chachamim disagree with that principle. Meaning, how could the Gemara build its case on Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir is a Das Yochid. We pass him like the Chachamim. Presumably, that's the principle of Yochid v'Rabim, Halacha k'Rabim. So why assume any kind of proof about whether she can get pregnant as a Ketana, she cannot get pregnant as a Ketana, based on Rabbi Meir? What about the Chachamim? So here I want to quote to you a note that I found here in the Masifta. And he says the following, that even according to the Chachamim, it's true that if she gets pregnant, she will die. And that a girl could not possibly, during her katnus, during the age of 11, give birth to a child, a viable being. The reason why the Chachamim disagree, as far as the permissibility of using a moch, is for a different reason. They think that we can rely on Hashem, and min hashamayim yirachemu, Hashem will have compassion and she won't get pregnant, so she won't die. But it comes out that even according to the Chachamim, there's no real possibility that she can become pregnant and carry to full term
within Narut.
We're not up to Narut yet.
Katnus.
Now, in the footnote here, he quotes a Maram Shif. And the Maram Shif says the following. I'm just going to read to you. It's a short line. Shemina shamayim yirachemu shalot tis'aber velosh yirachemu shalot tomos afshe tis'aber. The Maram Shif claims that according to Chachamim, there is a reality, there is a mitzvus of pregnancy during this year of her life, between 11 and 12. The Maram Shif claims that the reason why the Chachamim are not worried about this pregnancy is because min shamayim yirachemu means that shalom tomos afshe tis'aver. So therefore it comes out that according to the Chachamim, if she does, in an event that she does get pregnant, we don't have to worry about her death because min hashamayim yiruchamu. Let me read it again. Pirush Maram Shif, shemin hashamayim yiruchamu. And he says the following. The language here is a little bit challenging. I don't know if we should spend too much time on this. I'll just mention the language of the Maram Shif. The Maram Shif was one of the great commentaries. We shouldn't ignore what he says. He says shalotis aver veloshi ruchamu shalot tomas afshetis aver v'imkein yotzei shledibrei chachamim yesh mitzius imur. There's a little bit of a discrepancy here between the opening line that he quotes in the name of the Maram Shif and the closing line. The closing line, he says, is that the Gemara really has no basis for its question, its objection to Rava, if you accept the Chachamim. And I'll read that again. There is a reality of Ibur Ketana. V'lo Shayach L'Hakshos Sal Rava. So the question here is totally founded upon Rabbi Meir. But in the Reisha, the beginning of his quote of the Maram Shif, he says, "Min hashamayim yiruchamu shalot tis'aver," that she won't become pregnant. So I don't know. The language here has to be ironed out here. There's a glitch in the language, because I think what it should say is that min hashamayim yiruchamu. And what does it mean? Shalo tomus afshetis aver. That's what I think the language would be. Which he says later on. But at the beginning he says shalo tis aver. Maybe you have to read it like this. shalot tisaver general, but afilu im tisaver yiruchavu shalot tavus afshet tisaver. No. This is just a bothersome quote of the. I don't have the mam shift to go back to the original, so I can't tell you. I can't tell you exactly what his language is. So I'm leaving this as an open-ended issue as to whether or not the Gemara is predicating its question here on Rabbi Meir, or even according to the Chachamim, there's no mitzvah that she could become pregnant, because Hashem will protect her from becoming pregnant. But if she would become pregnant, then she would die. But Hashem protects her that she won't become pregnant. So the bottom line is, according to this, and certainly according to Rabbi Meir, there's no mitzvah of a ketana who became pregnant and could give birth. So now the Gemara is going to raise two v'chitemus, two possibilities, and reject both of them, shoot them both down. That's going to force us to reformulate Rava's suffering. The first possibility is to say that Rava was not worried about the case of a ketana, but rather the case of a nara. De'i abra kishihi nara. She became pregnant when she was already 12 years old. Technically it means 12 years old in a day, and she had shtei saros, so she already has the status of a nara. And at that point there's no sakana in her life, right? Because keep in mind, the only hetter to use a moch according to Rabbi Meir was during that 1 year between 11 and 12. Once she's 12 and she's a nara, then she can carry the full term and give birth to a viable being without endangering her life. Hence we don't allow her to use a moch. Then the olida, when did she give birth? Kishi nara, during this period of time of naros. In other words, maybe there's a possibility that during the naros period she became pregnant and she gave birth. Okay, fine. Says the Gemara, that's impossible. Why? Ubishiso yarche mikoyolda. Is it possible for a woman to carry to term, give birth to a viable being within 6 months? That she became pregnant as a nara, and she gave birth as a nara, which is all of 6 months, as Gemara is going to prove in just a second, that naras is totally, is all in all 6 month period of time. Now, it could be, in our physiological, advanced technological world, that there is such a thing as a fetus that can survive after 6 months.
Well, it depends what you mean by that. They have special care for premature babies.
Right, they put them into a pagia.
So, if that counts as viable or not, is a question.
I don't see why not. I mean, what would happen, for example, in our reality, if they, as a result of incubation, this preemie that was born within the 6 month period of after conception would become a viable being, and the parents pass on, 120 years later, would the baby inherit the parents? I would think yes. As a Yerusha here, our whole discussion here is if you hold the Yesh Baga Bekever, and she's considered a Bogeres, which means that had she been alive, she could be Zoch in the Knas for herself. Can she now bequeath that Knas to her heirs? And the Gemara thought that Rava was saying that she has an heir. The Gemara saying, no, you can't imagine that she had an heir, because a Ketana can't give birth to a viable being, she'll die. But Nara is only 6 months, and she can't give birth to a viable being within that 6 month period.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. In our reality, maybe we have such sophisticated incubation. Maybe things would change. I don't know. V'amar Shmuel ein bein Naras lebagrus elashisha chadashim. The entire length of time of Naras is nothing more than 6 months. So from the time that she reaches 12 years old, she has shtei saras, she enters into the status of a nara, and 6 months later she becomes bogeres. So it's not possible to say that she became a bogeres and she's a mother of a child because she became pregnant at the age of 12 when she hit the naras period. Because to give birth within naras is impossible, the Gemara says, because naras expands up to, but not beyond, 6 months.
And 6 months is l'kuli alma, or close enough?
So that's a good question. So again, we have a footnote here. And the question is follows. Is there a possibility that bagrus could be postponed beyond 6 months? In other words, possibility number one, and that seems to be the Gemara's assumption here, the premise is that automatically, you just look at the clock, you tick away, 6 months later, after she became a Nara, she's automatically a Bagra, and that's an absolute. The other possibility would be to say that she doesn't automatically become a Bogeris, that there may be conditions that have to be met in order for her to enter into this new state of Bagrus, in which case that maybe her Naros could go beyond 6 months, which would mean that she could give birth after 7 months to a viable being and she's still a Nara.
Wait, didn't we have a physiological criterion, more Shechor than Levon, or something like that?
Well, that was in terms of an islandess, meaning...
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
Right, so okay. She doesn't have Simoni Naros at all.
Okay.
But the question is, again, I'm leaving this as an open-ended question, we'll get to it in Mirtz Shem later, is there such a thing as postponing Bagrus and the transition to Bagrus could take place a month or two later? I do want to read to you a note here, and why did the Chachamim, so ask the Rishonim, why do they hold that there's an Isur to be Meshamish B'moch in a case of Sakana? We said that Shomer P'sayim Hashem. Shomer P'sayim Hashem means that God will protect you. Well, if God will protect me, then maybe I can go into a lion's den and I can say God will protect me. I can expose myself to danger. I can walk under a kir natui, you know, some sort of leaning tower, and I'll say God will protect me. So at what point do we apply the principle of Ein Somchin Al Nes? We don't rely on miracles. And we go according to Teva. So in this case, she's putting herself into danger by not using a moch. So he quotes here a tshuva called the Toras Chesed. I'm not sure who authored the Toras Chesed. There is a work by the Chafetz Chaim called the Toras Chesed, but I don't think that's what he's referring to, because it's Shilas and Tshuvas on Eben Ezer. I don't know that. And he writes that when do you apply Shomer P'sayim Hashem and you suspend the principle of Ein Somchin Al Nes, that's when it's a Chashash Rachok, when it's a far out chance. Again, I don't know what that is. Is that 5%? Is that 1%? I don't know what it is, but some sort of very slim statistical probability, Shetis Abra, in this case, that she'll become pregnant. In other words, generally speaking, a girl of that young age doesn't have the physiological capability of becoming pregnant, of conception, but it could happen. So the Chacham say it's such a far out possibility, they're not choshish for that, and therefore it's not a violation of Ein Somchin Al Nes, but rather it's Shomer P'sayim Hashem. Then he quotes from Elchanan Vassman, who says the following: Vadai kol makom shebiyad adam lizor misakana. Whenever a person can be careful against danger, we're not going to apply the principle of Pesi, of Shomer P'sayim Hashem. Here we're going to apply the principle of Pesi. Why? She'ein adam chayav limona miminog derech eretz. Meaning, if the Torah recognizes the marriage of a ketana, and the marriage of a ketana means within that context that she'll have intimate relations, that's called derech eretz. And there's a special halacha of Shomer P'sayim Hashem whenever there's derech eretz, whenever it's the way of all flesh, so to speak, the way it's... In other words, if you're going to act in an unnatural way, no one else would do it in the same, you know, in that situation, would do what you're doing and expose yourself to some danger, then there's no Shomer P'sayim Hashem. Again, I would apply it today to a bicycle rider. Let's say a bicycle rider would decide that he or she is not going to wear a helmet. That's not derech eretz. In fact, legally, you have to wear a helmet. Or if you're going to drive a car without a seatbelt. I don't think you can apply the principle of Shomer P'sayim Hashem, because according to Rabbi Elchanan, at least, you have to be nimna, you have to avoid a sakana, unless it's derech eretz, and this is not called derech eretz. But to have a marriage relationship where a man and woman live together, that's natural, that's derech eretz. And therefore, once it's in the getter of Derech Eretz, a person is not expected to go out of his way to do an action to protect himself from danger, and he can rely on Shomer P'soyim Hashem. So we get to the issue that I mentioned yesterday about smoking, that maybe at some point in time it was Shomer P'soyim Hashem, because that was the Derech Eretz to smoke. I think nowadays we can no longer, after the Surgeon General's report, we can't say that it's Derech Eretz to smoke. And we know that smoking it blackens your lungs and a million and one other diseases from smoking. So I don't think it's Derech Eretz, and I don't think Shomer P'soyim Hashem would apply. Rav Moshe himself rescinded his original tshuva, and he has a whole discussion about what's called secondary smoke. Are you considered exposing yourself to danger by going to a place where there's smoke in the air? That itself might be. So I thought that was a footnote that might interest you. At least it interests me. I don't know if you feel the same way. Okay. So now the Gemara offers another v'chitema. Maybe we don't have to read Shmuel exactly the way we read Shmuel. We sort of gave it an extreme twist. We said, according to Shmuel, you simply count, the clock ticks from the age of 12 till she reaches 6 months later, it's 12 and a half, and ge'endik, now she becomes bogeres. But Chitema says, well, maybe that's not true. What Shmuel meant to say was that baser hu deleka, that she cannot become bogeres within less of a period of time of 6 months. 6 months is a minimum, but it's not a maximum. It's very possible that she won't become a bogeres automatically when she hits her half birthday, and you can extend the period of naros beyond 6 months. So it's possible that if we extend naros beyond 6 months to 7 months, maybe even to 9 months, then you could have a case where she became pregnant as a Nara, and she gave birth and she's still a Nara. Why is she still a Nara? So the Gemara doesn't spell out this Havim, why she would still be a Nara. What would be a halachic reasoning that would postpone her transition from the state of Naras to Bagus? The Gemara immediately rejects this Havim, and says, Ha Elokoma, meaning, Shmuel went out of his way to add the extra emphasis, the word Ella Shisha Kadoshim, to tell you in both directions that that's the minimum and the maximum, that she automatically makes this transition to becoming a Bogeres with her half birthday. And she can never have an extension of Anaris beyond 6 months. But the Gemara doesn't explain the Havamina here, that Hotfei Ika, I don't have a grasp on this right now. I'm hoping that it'll become clear later on. What does it mean, Hatfei Ika in the Havamina? What was the Havamina? What would be Simoni Bagrus? And if those Simonim do not manifest themselves in her physical reality, then she doesn't become Bogeris.
Could you say that if we hadn't rejected the Havamina, then the Gemara would have told us? Just simply because it threw it out so quickly, didn't bother.
Yeah, I don't know. It could be. If I'm really hard pressed, that's what I'm going to say. But I'd be a much happier camper if I. You see, Eric, if he was here, he has the art school, and I'm wondering if by chance art school addresses this question. Does Steinzel say anything about it? Other words.
Art school right there.
Where's an art school? Oh. Can I borrow this? Maybe by chance he adds a footnote here. Nothing in Steinsatz here. On these words,
I don't think so.
Hatfei Ika. Those are the three words I just want to see. Asher, we wanted to prepare a red carpet for you today.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Asher's last day.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
You got tired of us?
What?
You got tired of us?
Unless you're coming into the States for a while.
Oh, you'll be back.
Yeah, I'm back.
That's such an expert on this. Let's see, we're on 39A,
right?
In which direction do you turn the page?
I would say the top third of the page. You could say the Top two thirds of the page are before the Mishnah, and this is on the boundary.
Okay.
It's if you see the Tosafot Viki Tema, so then you're like one line below that.
So wait, 39A. Oh, here's a 1.
Hatfei Ika.
I'm just trying to see if by chance he adds anything. Hatfei Ika. Oh, here it is. Hatfei Ika. Let's see. He has a footnote number 15. He says it never takes more than 6 months to develop from a Nara to a Bogeris.
Sounds like he's explaining the rejection.
Yeah. Mm. Doesn't explain the Abba. Here you go, Jerry. I'm returning this to you with a sense of disappointment. And Rabbi Schneitz, it doesn't say anything. I thought that would be up his alley. The Masifta says nothing. I don't know. It's like a little bit of a pella here. Is there such an entity as Simoni Bagrus? You know, that, because the Gemara seems to be intimating this, at least in the Abba. All right. So now we have to reformulate the suffix of Rava. It cannot be that Rava's suffix was Yesh Bagav Bekever, Ein Bagav Bekever, and on the side that Yesh Bagav Bekever, the father's out of the picture, and therefore the Yerusha goes to the son because she doesn't have a son. So the Gemara reformulates. Ella, Hachi, Kami, Boile. We have to reformulate the suffix of Rava. It was an ones to a Nara, and the Hamad of Bedin didn't take place until she died. And we're going to say the following: Yesh Baga Bekever Upaka Av, meaning the father is completely out of the picture if we assume that we just simply count the 6 month period of time from her Narus. And even though she's gone from this world, nevertheless she became a Bogeres. And now what we're saying is that we're completely removing any schus of the av. The onus is, the ma'anes here is just off the hook. He doesn't have to pay. Why? Because normally a bogeris would collect her own knas, but in this case she's gone, and she doesn't have rights to her knas. So it's not that she would bequeath the rights to her knas to her heir, but rather the entire enterprise of Knas is completely removed. I'll read to you the language here that he has in the name of the Rishonim. You'll take a look at Rashi, who says, Upaka ha'av. Do you see such a Rashi?
Yes.
Upaka tvias av. So the way he translates this Rashi is the following. Hufka az chuso shal av b'knas zeh. Ve'ha'ones, meaning the ma'anes, lo yechuyev l'shalim klal. He will not have to pay. In other words, you and I would have said that if she became a bogeres and she has rights to her knas, she died without any children, because we've already proven that it's impossible for her to have children. Let the father step in and let he inherit her zchuyot, her rights to collect knas, and therefore he would collect the knas. So Rashi says no, there's no possibility that the father would step into his late daughter's shoes to collect the knas. Why not? In other words, Abai was the one who had a pasuk, if you remember, the Nasama via Nara Velola via Mesa. But Rava didn't operate with that pasuk. He didn't have that drasha. So therefore, what's Ein Baga Mekever? So Rashi throws in another element into the equation. Uknas lav maman hu lo risho li avia b'toris Yerusha. Rashi's saying that although the parsha of Nachla, parsha Matas, has the Yerusha, but that's only for maman, but not for knas. And therefore, if the knas was never collected, because she died before she could collect the knas, then she cannot be morish a mama that she has to her children. Ella what? She wants to be morish a schus on a knas. Well, Rashi says that there's no parasha of nachla with regard to the knas. Now, she doesn't have a child, that we've proven, but she has a father. Her father would normally inherit her, but he can't inherit a knas. It comes out that according to Rashi, the Lashon HaShasir of Paka Ha'av or Lo Paka Ha'av, which is what the Gemara is vacillating about, is predicated on the assumption that there's no Yerusha in Knas. And we're going to see later on that not all the Rishonim agree to that. And there are Rishonim who hold that Knas does lend itself to Nachla. And if that be the case, we're going to have to try to understand what does it mean Paka Ha'av.
They mean knas that hasn't been paid yet, right?
Right, we're talking about a knas that hasn't been paid yet. Once the knas is collected, it becomes mammon, and then then it's subject to Yerusha. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, the Yorish will inherit everything that she has in her possession. Yeah, but
and if she dies right after her mother, after the Beis Din gave
Then we go through Seder Nachlis, assuming she has no child, as we've established, therefore we go to the father. So what does Gemara mean by saying Yesh Baga Bekemer, and therefore Pokas Husa Poka Av? Why is Poka Av? At Petor's Yoresh, he should pick up his daughter as a Bogeris' right. And the answer is, says Rashi, because there's no such thing as being Morish Knas. But that's Rashi's sheet. It's not the sheet of other Rishonim. The other Rishonim hold that the Yorish simply steps into the feet of the Morish, and therefore he or she, whoever it is, will now sue for a knas, because the schus for the knas already emerged with the onus, with the vice onus. So we're going to have to figure out, according to those Rishonim, I'm just mentioning the issue, and this is more for my 11:45 class, but how to understand this sugya according to those Rishon who say that Knas does lend itself to Yerusha. But now we have another formulation of the suffix of Rava, and that's Mar Bravashi Boile Hachi. This is the way he formulated Rava's suffix. Misa Osa Bagrus O Ein Osa Bagrus. In other words, we're not talking about a case where 6 months have passed since her Naris. The Hamad of Bedin is taking place within the 6 month period of her Naris. So, in a sense, she's still a Nara, but she died. And the question is, how do we view or define that moment of death, that occurrence of death? According to one Sa'ad in Rava's suffix, the way Mar Ravashi records it, is Misa Osa Bagus. The Misa itself gives her a din of a Bogeris, and that itself is enough to be Mafkia, to remove the Schus of the Av in a Knas situation.
Wait, I'm sorry. She's still not Rava. You said there's Hamabadin, which means there's a Pesachdin?
No, there's not yet.
Just that she hasn't gotten her hot little hands yet?
Well, we're not up to the Hamabadin yet. What we're up to on the clock is within the 6 month period.
Okay.
Right? So let's say the onus took place when she hit the birthday of 12, correct? And then she died, and now she's, you know, had she been alive, she would be 12 in a month.
Okay.
So within the Naris period.
Okay.
Why can't the father now be Tovea Knas? You know, the original svara that we said before of Baga Bekever in the first formulation of Rava was that 6 months had passed and she became a Bogeris in the Kever. Now we're saying that we're within the 6 month period, and if she were alive, she'd be 12 in a month. And Mar Ravashi, in the name of Rava, has it sad to say that she's a Bogeris. Why is she a Bogeris? I mean, she's only 12 years and 1 month. And that gives us the presentation called Misa Osa Bagus, that the Misa itself gives or generates a din of Bogeris. She's already a Bogeris. And that accomplishes our goal of being Mafkia, the Schusav, of taking the father out of the picture because she's a Bogeris. Oh, in the second side, Ein Osa Bagus. We cannot remove the schus of the Av and consider her a Bogeres. Why? Because she died. But that doesn't make her into a Bogeres. So I have a footnote here, and this is based on a very long, complicated presentation of Rashi, but we'll sort of give a summary of this. And he says the following, that what the Gemara said earlier, that Rav had a suffix, and Abaye was poshut, to Abaye was simple, Rashi says that that reflects this formulation of Marbar Avashi of Rava. Why? If we go with the original understanding of Rava's Safek, and Rava wanted a, and Rava had a Safek as far as Bagus Li'achar Misa, right? In other words, shall we say that since 6 months passed, therefore she became a Bogeres, then he's rejecting Abaye, because Abaye is saying that we're being mafkia the schus of the father. Rav is saying that the father still has a schus, but she's a Bogeres. And therefore Rav would say, well, who's next in line to inherit the schus of Knas? And the Gemara went back and forth, and is there a son? There's not a son. But if there's, the final maskon is that it's impossible for her to have a son, therefore the father would now inherit her knas. So that Rava certainly understood that there is a schus that the father could possibly, materialize and realize that schus, even though she died. According to Abaye, the very moment she dies, the father is completely out of the picture, and there's no knas, period. According to the original formulation of Rava, the father's not out of the picture. Why? Because Rava is trying to figure out, well, since she has a son, maybe the son should inherit her. If there's no son, then the father will inherit her. But you see that the father was not excluded. And that's Rava in the first formulation, which is called Yesh Baga Bekever or Ein Baga Bekever. Now, says Rashi, we're up to Marbar Avashi, and that's called a Misa Osa Bagrus or Eina Osa Bagrus. Now what Rava is presenting is a possibility of accepting Abaye, that Pokas Chusa Av, that if Misa is considered Bagrus, the father is completely out of the picture, and hence there'll be no one to collect the Knas. Alright, Boy Mine Rava Me Abaye. Rava, this is a little bit unusual, but Rava asks a question to Abaye. Because until now, we were talking about a case of an onus of a Nara, and then the Mishnah had a discussion, and that was Rabbi Akiva in one version, Rabbi Akiva in the other version, Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva in the Price. What happens of in this Arsa, in this Garsha? All that took place after the onus. And then we vacillated back and forth. Does the father lose his rights once she was in the Sarasim and his Garish? Rav is going to ask Abaye the following question. Ba'alev v'nisarasa. The onus took place not after Nisarasim and his Garish, but rather before she was an Arusa. And now we have the time period between the onus and what's called the Hamadah B'din. And in the middle, she became an Arusa. Mahu. Who collects the knas in this case? On the one hand, she's an arusa. So in that sense, she's already begun the process of leaving the rishus of the father. For example, if we take Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah says that in the case of this arusa and this garsha, the father is out of the picture. He could never collect her knas. Here we're talking about a case where there was a right of the father, the schus of the father emerged at the time of the onus, before the erusin. So the question now is, does erusin have the power to undermine, to uproot the rights of the father to collect knas? In the case of Rabbi Akiva and Mishnah, once she was this arsim and this garisha, she left the rishus of the father, and therefore at the time of the onus, the father was completely... Paka, he was mufka from his chus to the knas. But now we're talking about a case where the father at the time of the onus had his chus of the knas. And now the question is, does the erusin remove the chus of the father? And here's where Rava vacillates back and forth. One side of Rava is to say no. In this case, since the father had that rishus over his daughter at the time of the onus, and therefore he acquired a schus to collect the knas, she's still somewhat in his rishus, after Erusin. We're going to see in a minute what happens if she had not only Erusin but Nisuin. But right now she only had Erusin. The father still has rights. And therefore, can that schus of the father that emerged with the onus be maintained? Or shall we say, once the Erusin took place, and to some extent she leaves the reshus of the father, he can no longer collect the knas because the amar b'din took place after the Erusin. Now, Tosis here, Dibur Maskel Ba Aleha, says L'Rabbi Akiva de Masnisen Kaboyle. And if you fast forward, he says L'Rabbi Akiva de Brisa Pshita de Knosalavim. Tosis puts this suffix of Rava within a certain restricted context, and that is Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah. Because it's Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah who removes the father from Knas in the case of Nisaris and Nisgarish. However, Rabbi Akiva the Braisa holds that even in the case of Nisaris and Nisgarish, the father is still in the picture. In other words, he still has the schus to collect the Knas. Why? Because according to Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, we're going to use right vehilo. What's the pasuk again? Vehilo arusa, whatever the pasuk says there, as exer shav. Right, so we're going to take it completely out of its context. And in this case, that she was never married; she was only an arusa, but not an asua. Rabbi Akiva the Braisa maintains that the father still has the reshus over the knas. Hence, this suffix of Rava could not be a possibility. But what's the possibility? I'm a little embarrassed, so I forgot the Asher lo aros. Okay, I forgot the word Asher. Right? Not Asher, but Asher. Asher lo aros. So you should know that this Tosfos is very important to understand the sugya of Vayro. So Amar Leis, Abai responds to Rav Meek Siv. Does it say in the pasuk, "V'nasan la'avi hanara asher lo arusa"? It never says in the pasuk asher lo arusa, which would imply that there's no knas for the father unless she's a lo arusa at the time of the collection of the knas, meaning at the time of the amar b'din. Had the Torah said "V'nasan," which the word "V'nasan" is a reference to the moment of the ruling of the court that the onus, that the ma'anis has to pay the knas, it should have said v'nasan to who? To an avi anara shalo arusa, that she's not an arusa now. She's an arusa now at the moment of hamara b'din, then the Torah is excluding her. But it doesn't say that. And therefore, as far as erusin is concerned, says Abaye, it's pshita that erusin per se would not take her out of the rishus of the father. And the pasuk says the following: "V'nasan ha'ish ha'shochev imo la'avi anara chamishun kesef." And therefore, if she was in this situation when she had a father, the avi anara, it matters not whether she was an arusa. So Rav is not happy with this. He says, "Ulutameich." If we're going to be consistent about it, what are we going to do, Abai? What are you going to do with this Braisa? Hadasanya. It says in the Braisa, Ba'aleh v'nises, in the case where, after the onus, she got married to someone, li'atzma, she collects her own knas. That would seem to apply, by the way, even if she's still a Nara. She still collects her own knas. Usually we think when she's a Nara, the knas goes to the father. He's in the driver's seat. But no, in this case, she was Vinicius. So according to your opinion, Mik Siv, why should the Brises say that Li'atzma, that the father is completely excluded? It doesn't say in the Pesukim, V'nasan la'avi anara asher lo nisua. Like the Torah should have added those words, Asher lo nesua. When does the father have rights? Because she's not a nesua. But if he's coming to collect his knas and she's already a nesua, the Torah only says, V'nasan la'avi anara. It doesn't say Asher lo nesua. So the Gemara now answers, meaning Abaye answers Rava's objection by saying, here I don't need the pasuk. You talk about an Nesua, I have a logical reason why I exclude the father, based on the halachas of Nesua. Hachi Ashna Hasam. In the case where she got married, meaning chuppah, after the Nesu'in, Hoil u bagrus motzia rishus ha'av, Nesu'in motzia rishus ha'av. We have two cases where a girl who was a nara now leaves the rishus of the father. One is when she becomes a bogeres. So now let's say, for example, she gets a job and she has a salary. That salary doesn't accrue to her father if she's a bogeres, she's 12 and a half. The father's rights to her, Maisi Yadayim, only apply when she's a Katana and a Nara, not when she's a Bogeres. And the same thing applies to Knas, that the father's excluded from Knas when she comes and becomes a Bogeres. Now let's make a parallel in the case of Nesu'in. V'Nesu'in Motzi'im Mishasa'av, once a woman is married to another man, the father loses his rights. He loses his rights for Maisi Yadayim. He loses his rights for what's called hafaras nedarim if she takes a neder and she's now married to someone else, then her new husband has exclusive rights to be made for nedarim. The father is completely out of the picture. So we see clearly that nesu'in is like bagrus. That just like in bagrus, the father's rishus terminates, so too with nesu'in, even though she's still a nara, the father's rishus terminates. And therefore, ma bagrus, just like in the case of bagrus, Ba'alel u'bagra, this is the sugi we're going to get to on Daf Mem Aleph, that if after the Ones she became a Bogeres before the Amor Bedin, is Knas Aliatzma, she collects her own Knas, because the Torah says V'nasan la'vi hanara, and the word V'nasan means the collection of the Knas. The collection of the Knas only applies to the father if he's the father of a Nara, but not if he's the father of a Bogeres. Once we have that pasuk, and we know from that pasuk that once she becomes a bogeres and she's left her shus of the father, he is excluded from knas. Is af nesu'in, I don't need another pasuk for that. I don't have to ask why the Torah didn't spell out, well, she's a lo nesu'a. Because ba'al levin nisayis liatzma, certainly the knas should go to herself, and the father's out of the picture, because nesu'in takes her out of the shus of the father, no less than bagrus does. Elo. But in the case of Erisin, that's what Abaye argues against Rava logically. Mikam mafti mirshusa di ovla gamri. Erisin doesn't completely remove her from the rishusa av. She still is in the rishusa av. For example, if she takes a neder, Hotanam, we have a Mishnah in the 10th parak in the Dorm, it says, Nara murasa. Now she has two people, within her Naris period, she has two people, two men, who are sort of like in control, each claim rishusa in the domain in terms of the Dorm. One is her father, because Erisin does not take her out of the rishus of the father. The other is the Aris, her husband. But again, he's not the full-fledged husband, because she still remains in the rishus of the father, as far as Erisin is concerned. So what we need is that Avia Ubaila Mefirin Lo Nedarim, which means we're going to need a joint partnership here, that both the father and the Baal will have to be Mefir HaNedarim. If they both agree that we don't want this Neder, if one of them is Makayim the Neder, then the Neder is Makuyim, and it's valid. But it's not valid if both of them agree that we want to cancel the Neder. But anyway, we see clearly from this Mishnah that the woman who has had Erisin, and she's still a Nara, has not left the Rishus of the father. And therefore it makes sense that the father should maintain his hold and his rights over the Knas. Now I have a footnote here in which he says that oddly, Erisin, up until the time that this Nara has Erisin, Mefir Ha'av Biatzma, Hafaras Nedarim is completely, exclusively in the domain of the father. The Ilu Bein Erisin Nesu'in, in a case where she's an Arusa, then between Erisin and Nesu'in, Avia Mefir is Nedarim, Beshutfus and Bala, as a partnership with her husband. And when does the father completely get bumped off and he's irrelevant as far as Hafaras Nedarim? That's after the Nesu'in. Then the Bala, her husband, gets absolute exclusive domain and control over on the Nedarim. Madua HaGemara, here's the question that we want to ask. Lo Dachasa, why did the Gemara reject and say that Arusa Rishus Avia, L'chol Inyan Mamoni? Why is it that in order for Abai to prove that despite the Eris and she's still in the Rishus of the father, he has to stretch his arm out to the Mishnah Nedarim, that the father is still a Baal Abbas as far as Hafaras Nedarim, and if the father is Mekayim, then there's Chal. Why not quote the Dini Mamonis? We're talking about Knas. Let's compare it to Maisi Yodea. If she has a salary, then the salary, even after Erisin, accrues to the father. Not only that, V'chein Kiddushev, let's say he marries her for a second time, she had Gerushin from her first husband, then the father collects the Kesef Kiddushin. So the Ritva answers that Kavanas HaGemara Lomar, Shalomi Boy Shalachol Dorishim Mamon Adayim Vrishus Avio Medes. It goes without saying that, and Abai didn't even have to point that out, as far as monetary law, she's still in the rishus of the father. Ella, he wanted to go even beyond that. Aflagabi HaFaris Nedarim, which is Isu V'Heter, that's not the Mominos, the Lo Yotza L'Gabi Rishuso. Ki Adayin Kocho Kayam V'HaFarosam, he still maintains his ability to be Mefer HaNedarim. Ella no Safale Yesh La Rishus HaCheres. Now, my understanding is that the Ritva understands that Knas is a little bit of an integration, an overlap of two elements. It's on the one hand, Dine Mominus, it's a matter of paying 50 shkolim, but on the other hand, it's also a result of the Maisa Onus, which was an Avera. And the Knas is generated by this violation, and therefore we have to consider it also within the context of Isa Veheta. So if we want to define whether the father should still have rights to those Knas, it's not enough to say, well, the father is still the bialim, you know, she's still Rishus Avia as far as monetary law. We want to know, is she still Rishus Avia as far as Isa Beheta is concerned? If the din was that he would have no rights to Anadarm at all, that would prove that as far as Isa Beheta is concerned, the Erisin took her completely out of the Rishus of the Baal. Hence, Abai feels compelled to quote the Mishnah of Naram Rasa, Avia Bialim, Avia Anadarm. Okay, so, then?
It was a case where maybe the Knas should be split between the future husband and the father, if she's a divorce.
So on the other hand, I would say that since...
Well, you have to be mafkir the father, so right now he's still in the driver's seat. So we're going to say that since the Aris is not enough to take the father out of his exclusive hafara, therefore he gets the Knas. Okay,